The Pacific region has the world's lowest rate of women's representation in Parliament. Today we'll ask what can be done to solve this deeply entrenched problem, and how might gender quotas play a role. Peony Bosa is the program manager at the Women's Rights Action Movement in Solomon Islands, and for 6 years she's been campaigning for greater political representation for women in her country. And Dr. Teresa Mecki is a Pacific Research Fellow in the ANU's Coral Bell School of Asia Pacific Affairs. Born in PNG, Teresa's her research focuses on women in her country's election history. And I welcome you both to LNL. Peony, first of all, to you. As of last week, you have a shiny, bright new Prime Minister. Here in Australia, there's been plenty of discussions about what it means for your country's relationship with China, but we hear very little about the impact on domestic issues. How are you feeling about the changing of the guard in the work you do?
Thank you, Phil. For Solomon Islands, we gained independence in 1978. So that makes us around 46 years now since independence. And for Solomon Islands, that issue in relation to women's leadership, specifically in the political space, has been an area that has developed at a very slow pace. Over the past 46 years, we have had only 6 women that have made it to Parliament at the end of the 11th Parliament. Now, the world and, of course, Australia would now come to know that we've now got a total of 8 women who have made it into Parliament, given the recent elections in the past 2.5 weeks. So all in all, that meant that over time, over the 46 years, we've managed to only get 8 female parliamentarians.
Tell me what temporary special measures are you and do you want to see introduced in the Solomon?
The campaign on temporary special measures and the work that our organization, the Women's Rights Action Movement, has been working on. We have partnered with the other sister organization that is here in the Solomon Islands, the National Council of Women. Both RAM and National Council of Women have partnered with the government to push the agenda to introduce temporary special measures as an action that we take to address the issue of the low representation of women as political leaders. Now, over the past 6 years, we have been campaigning for women's political leadership in the sub-national level within our provincial government.
Let me clarify something. You're proposing extra seats for women, and I suppose that's a less threatening way with the men because they don't feel they're being pushed out.
It is less threatening, but I think for Solomon Islands and for the campaign that we're working on, we're also learning from the Pacific region in terms of having to take action, especially when we've come over the past 4 to 5 national elections where we have had the most highest number of women, 26 that have contested, and we managed to get at the time only one female getting into national parliament. Now, that's at the parliamentary level. Learning from that experience and looking at where it may be more feasible to start, we're really looking at introducing additional seats for women in the provincial assembly level. Coming to the issue of temporary special measures, we are really introducing a concept where it's been used in the Pacific region, in other countries that have benefited from such a concept. In our context, our people here, they have very limited understanding of the temporary special measures concept. And so introducing temporary special measures, it took us time to make sure that we are able to reach out to the people out in the community. And when I talk about communities, we're talking really about the rural and the remote setting, where we've reached out to them to talk about the temporary special measures concept. It has been a very tiring and tedious work that we've had to go through, but we've been lucky to be successful in that. We've had the 11th Parliament, the past Parliament, endorsing the idea in the Cabinet to have TSM introduced at the provincial assembly levels. So we're still having to do a little bit more work to then take it to Parliament.
Now let's bring Theresa into the discussion. Well, there's some good news about TSMs. Are they applicable in other parts of the Pacific, or do they require different approaches?
So there are various types of gender quota systems. The one in the Pacific that's sort of an example, and it's really good in the sense that it can be applied in other countries, is the Samoan approach. So they have this system where if fewer than 5 women are elected in any election, the highest polling unsuccessful female candidates in the election they create 5 seats for them in the parliament. So there's always at least minimum 10%.
So that's a safety net, isn't it?
It's a safety net. So in the event that 5 women get elected, they don't have to sort of apply that. But in the event that no women get elected, then that gets into effect.
What about in PNG? The idea of reserving seats had been proposed.
So PNG is just, it's had a long, the most recent, not most recent, it's quite a while now. So the last big sort of debate that got a lot of public attention with reserve seats was in 2011, and that was leading up to the 2012 election. So back then, the only female candidate in parliament was Dame Carol Kidu. She's been in parliament for 10 years by that time, or 15, I think, and she was worried that after she left, there wouldn't be any women in parliament. So herself with, of course, all the civil and civil society groups, UNDP, there was a lot of advocacy and campaign to introduce 22 reserve seats to correlate with 22 provinces around PNG. So we'd have one woman representing each province. So unfortunately, that went through the first round of voting in parliament, but it needed an enabling act to become law, and it didn't get enough support.
There's even a division of opinion amongst female leaders, because some see it as a way to change attitudes, while others think it might undermine the standing of women in parliament.
It's really like the criticisms that go against it. Some people say, oh, it's undemocratic because you're taking the vote away, or women should campaign just like men, or, you know, so a lot of misunderstanding also how it should be applied. And of course, we have a very strong patriarchal culture and with men in power. So for a long time, that's another barrier that we have to sort of, it's a generational thing and a changing mindsets and educating. So with the awareness that was made, some people understood and maybe some people didn't. But ultimately, when it gets to parliament, it didn't get enough support. So
now the ANU funded a Vote for Change program.
So that one, I think it was after the 2017 election when we had 0 women get into parliament. And that previous sort of workshops that people tend to run prior to elections fixate on, you know, campaign strategies or how to talk when you go out and those type of things, right, just at the eve of election almost. But this campaign that the ANU ran sort of looked at going into the community and talking about people and just educating, you know, various aspects of equal representation and democracy and just the importance of having women leaders. And it also worked with women candidates who fared very well in previous elections. So that has been quite beneficial because currently the two women who are in got elected in the 22 elections 2 years ago, they were part of that program as well.
I understand that global literature shows that quota increases have an effect across the system because women replace less qualified men.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't heard that one. I'm not surprised though. It's so in Bougainville, now it's the autonomous region of Bougainville, they also have 3 seats for women, but in the recent elections and the previous one, 2020, more women, 2 other women were elected in seats that were not designated for them. So this criticism that, oh, if you just have the reserve seats, women won't go for other open seats. But with Bougainville, that didn't happen. Women went in for their seats and they also contested for other seats and got in. So it's really good to see that, dispel that fear that people would just gravitate towards just the reserve seats and not the open seats in Bougainville's case.
Teresa, what does the global research say about the success of quotas at raising women's participation?
It seems to have worked everywhere. I'm not really familiar with the figures, but only in the Pacific we are just under 10%. And everywhere else that have put quotas in, like Rwanda, these places, they have really good increase of women getting into parliament.
Well, Rwanda is an excellent example, oddly enough, because it now holds the title of highest representation of women in any national parliament.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And even closer to home, like you see with Samoa, and just like they've had Fiame come through, and it's just such a force to get over the structural barriers. So it's really important. It's a very hard discussion to have because there's so much sort of awareness and education that needs to go on all the time. But when it happens, it's really good because there's some things in the electoral culture and just the convention of doing elections and campaignings that it's hard to get around, and it's more difficult for women to get into that space that's been male-dominated for so long.
The tragedy in Rwanda, of course, was the genocide in 1990 led to a new constitution in Rwanda, and they wrote a mandate that a third of the seats must be reserved for women.
I think it's that saying out of order out of chaos. It's sort of when you go flat at the bottom, you start new and you have these new perspectives. Like with Bougainville's case, after the crisis, they have 3 seats for women who were very instrumental in the peace building process, and 3 seats for ex-combatants who fought during the crisis. So there's a bit of silver lining in all that tragedy, I guess.
Peony, I was stunned to read that 64% of women in the Solomon Islands between 15 and 49 have experienced physical or sexual violence, or both, by an intimate partner.
Exactly, Phil. I think that's one of the key reasons why it's very important for us to have more women in our parliament as well as in our provincial assemblies. I think for Solomon Islands, the campaign on temporary special measures started well before RAM continued with the temporary special measures campaign at provincial level. It was something that our women leaders, both past and present, had advocated to the national government, and it reached cabinet at that level. It was temporary special measures looking at the national parliament level. And it was put back to the women's organizations, the women's leaders at the time who did a lot of the advocacy. And one of the things that cabinet said to them at the time in 2009 was to do more wider consultation. So like Teresa had shared, I think the need for people to understand the concept was critical. And that's something that probably the campaign that RAM is has been doing with our partners and will continue to work on is really having that opportunity within the last 6 years to consult our people in the rural and the remote areas about the concept and engaging in such a way where we are highlighting the importance of women's leadership at the political level.
So there are so many interrelated issues. Age of consent is still 15 in Solomon Islands, leaving girls and women vulnerable. And there's an urgent need to include child custody and matrimonial property rights.
Exactly, Phil. Work or the campaign on increasing the age for marriage is currently being is in progress now, and one of the issues around the amendment on the legislation for Affiliation, Separation and Maintenance Act is something that we know we need to maybe have more advocacy, more work done on that part. But I think for now, for RAM and our partners, it's critical that we continue to take the work that we're doing on temporary special measures at the provincial assembly level to our members of parliament. We hope to get to parliament. If we're on track, we want to get to parliament in July, when this parliament will sit for the very first time. But in the case where we don't get in by July, we're hoping to have this piece of work taken up to Parliament at their last sitting of this year. So it's to do with having the enabling environment for a TSM provision put into legislation so that the provincial assemblies can introduce seats for their women in the provincial assembly level. So there's still more work that we need to do, but we're hopeful that we'll get to Parliament in 2024.
I'd like you to give some advice now to other activists who may be listening. It's been 6 years of tireless advocacy to get this far. And when you're trying to persuade powerful men to make space for women, what kind of strategies and messages work?
I think every context is different. We are here at RAM. We learn to listen very carefully when we consult with our different target audiences. We ensure that we get back to them with the information that they're asking for. We ensure that we are careful about our messages, that we don't give incorrect or inaccurate messages when we're talking to them, because we know that our people in the rural areas, when they're not aware of any concept or something is new to them, they may see it as a foreign concept. I think one of the key things that we've been able to tell our people in the communities is that TSMs or quotas can be done in different sectors. So we talk about introducing TSMs in the education sector, in the health sector. So we do give examples when we talk about a concept so that they can relate to it. So it's very important for us to know our context, know who we're talking to, and tailoring the messages so that they can be clear for them to understand temporary special measures.
Teresa, what have you learned about the best strategies for shifting attitudes in PNG and indeed across the Pacific?
Well, for this issue, particularly with women's underrepresentation, I see that we don't continue the momentum. It seems to arise during the election period or after the election. Whereas if we really want progress and a shift in getting attitudes, it has to be a regular thing in the news, building momentum throughout the electoral cycle. Because in the Pacific and in PNG in particular, people forget it's not, it becomes news unworthy very quickly. So if we can build momentum, not just with activists, but social, through social media, civil societies, NGO, everyone coming together, then we're actively concerted effort would make the message get across so that the politicians can see that this is an issue, because we have to hold them accountable for all these Beijing platforms and all these international agreements that they sign and they don't come home and enforce. So it's a way of making it relevant, and they have to find it relevant, and we're responsible for bringing that message across regularly, I think.
You've heard the voices of Teresa Mackey from the ANU and Peony Boso from the Women's Right Action Movement in the Solomon Islands.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.